From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Since the November 3rd elections, the state of Georgia has unwittingly become the center of the U.S.'s political universe. Two critically important Senate runoff races on Tuesday could determine which party holds power in the Senate. And a traditionally red state that has only recently begun to sway toward Democrats has become the target of intense pressures by the Trump campaign and its allies to engineer a win there for the president. The recent phone call between Trump and Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, showing the president using the coercive tactics of a mafia mobster, has only heightened tensions. My guest is Carolyn Fidler. She's one of the nation's foremost experts on state politics and also is communications director at Daily Kos. And she writes This Week in State House Action, a newsletter that provides updates on state politics to thousands of reporters, political operatives, and observers each week. We had her on right after the November 3rd elections, or as those elections were wrapping up. Welcome back, Carolyn.
Thanks for having me.
I guess it wasn't election day, it was election week, maybe election 3 weeks. And here we are with, before we even get to the Senate runoff races, which should have been all that we would have discussed today, we still have a president who refuses to accept that he lost in the state of Georgia, that that state's voters actually voted for Joe Biden. He refuses to accept that. So let's talk about the massive controversy around the now infamous Saturday phone call, which came just days before the Senate runoff races. How did you react to the audio that was leaked to newspapers of Trump's call?
Mostly I was surprised that I could still be surprised, because we obviously know there's no length to which Trump won't go. There's no basement. There's no floor to what he'll stoop to do what he wants, to get what he wants, in this case, staying in office. So, but yeah, I was shocked and dismayed and really, I hope the consequences for this are dire, because he deserves to bear the consequences of it. It's not an okay thing for the president of the United States to do.
He implied that machines were being removed, ballots were being shredded, seemed to threaten Mr. Raffensperger, that he was engaging somehow in a criminal offense if he didn't recalculate the votes, and then just flat out cited a very specific number of votes that he simply needs Raffensperger to conjure up in order to have a win. I mean, that's pretty overt.
Yeah. I mean, literally, he requested that one more vote than what he needs to win be found. It doesn't get more black and white than that.
Do you compare or do you see a comparison with this call and the call that Trump had with President Zelensky of the Ukraine, which led to his impeachment last year?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a very natural parallel to draw, and one that should be drawn. In fact, in a better, sunnier world with fewer crises, perhaps we would be talking very seriously about further articles of impeachment. Never mind that he's leaving office. This is not an acceptable course of behavior from the president of the United States.
So Raffensperger is emerging as this bulwark against, essentially engineering the election for Trump. Many have said that were he a different kind of Republican, because now we seem to have these two very distinct breeds of Republicans, that we would be seeing a very different situation. Were he willing to play ball, as other Republicans are willing to do in order to please Trump, we might not even necessarily know what was happening behind the scenes in Georgia. How is his role playing out, as far as you can tell, in Georgia at the state level?
Well, interestingly, this is where we are now in terms of political discourse in the state of the Republican Party. He is literally just doing his job, the baseline things he has to do in his role as Secretary of State, by not giving in to requests to throw the election, to falsify election results. And so he's getting all the attaboys in the world because of it. And yes, it's good that he's doing that, but this is what anyone should be doing. This is what we should expect from all of our elected officials, Republican or Democrat. So, and yes, this whole situation could be going pear-shaped if he were one of those other kinds of Republicans. But again, he's doing what he is supposed to do. And that's good. But when that's the higher level of the Republican Party these days, that's a really sad state for them.
It seems as though Georgia Republicans, who, of course, have controlled state politics there for a long time, had attempted a different way of, let's say, engineering wins for Republicans, which was to simply suppress the vote at its source and seem to be averse to conjuring up votes or creating some sense of voter fraud after the fact. Would that be fair to say? What role has Raffensperger played in not making it easy for Georgia voters to cast ballots?
That's exactly right. The party, not just Secretary of State, but the entire Republican Party in the state of Georgia has spent many years working very hard at the state legislative level and at the regulatory level in the Secretary of State's office to prevent, to make it more difficult for Georgians to get to the polls, to cast their ballots, either by mail or in person. They make it more difficult to register. They get rid of, they purge voter rolls, things like that. So while, yes, the Secretary of State is refusing to commit a criminal act by committing fraud about election results, he has also fought very hard along with the rest of his party to suppress votes in Georgia.
One of the things that Trump said in his conversation with Raffensperger was that because Trump lost the state of Georgia as per the official count, it is discouraging Republicans to show up to vote for the Senate races. He drew a direct line between his loss in Georgia and the Senate runoff races on Tuesday. Is there any truth to that?
Quite possibly. One of the things that I think surprised a lot of election observers on election day this year, on November 3rd, was Republican turnout, specifically for Trump. That hadn't been happening in a way that necessarily benefited Republicans in recent elections, but it definitely benefited Trump. But Trump's not on the ballot on Tuesday. These two other Republicans are. And with so much controversy within the party in the state around, you know, whether or not real Trump supporters should vote, it creates a real problem for Republicans come Tuesday.
And there is, of course, a fine line that the GOP candidates seeking re-election are having to walk, David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler, both of whom have, well, Perdue seems to be more overt in saying that he backs an effort for Trump to overturn the election, Loeffler saying that she would be looking into it. There was also this whole effort late last year around some Republican figures, not necessarily party officials, but figures like Trump lawyer Sidney Powell, simply encouraging voters to not come out and vote because you couldn't trust the voting systems in Georgia, which really seemed to be a self-defeating, you know, sort of cutting off your nose to spite your face approach. So it seems as though the Republicans are really quite muddled in Georgia. Is this internecine battle within the party impacting Republican voter turnout in the state?
Definitely. Based on what we know about the early votes so far, Republican people who voted in the Republican primary previously aren't turning out at the same volume, the same percentages in terms of early vote at this point. That said, we all know that Republicans do tend to turn out more on actual election day than Democrats do in this current environment. So this could all go away tomorrow, but keep in mind that it wasn't until about 48 hours after the election that we realized that Joe Biden had a lead in Georgia. So we're not going to know the results on election night one way or another.
Right. And that leads me to this question of polls. In 2016, in the presidential race, we had the massive issue of polls being wildly wrong. Last year's race also suggested that polling was wrong, although when all was said and done, it wasn't as wrong as they thought it was. Right now, we are seeing the Democratic candidates with slim leads in some polls, but others are saying, don't pay attention to the polls. What are you, as a journalist, you know, how do you view these polls?
I view these polls as important data points, but there have been some problems with polls in recent elections, but more importantly than that, this particular race is going to be won and lost on the margins. Like these margins of victory for whoever wins, they're going to be very small. And so thinking that like a little tiny, like couple of point lead here or there for a Democrat is something that should make everyone feel, you know, warm and fuzzy is that's just smoke in the wind. There is no third party voting on the runoff. There's no
by definition, it's a runoff between the top two vote getters, right?
Exactly. There's no blank line to write in Mickey Mouse if you don't like either one. So it changes the nature of the election, and it means that whichever candidate wins in both of these races, it's going to be just by chipping a little bit away of the other person's electorate here and there and adding a little bit more here and there to yours. It's going to be very close one way or another.
Right. And just like in the presidential race, Senate races are statewide races. This is not like voting for your House representative. So the entire state votes for their Senate for the person to represent them in the Senate, which again means that you can have wildly different responses in the red or more rural parts of the state versus the bluer, city-based, more urban part of the states, right? And so you have in those hubs like Atlanta, the Democratic strongholds, you're likely seeing very different voting patterns than you are in the red parts of the state. And then it may all come down to counting, especially in states where there's a higher density of voters, I imagine.
Right, exactly. When there are more votes to count, it just takes longer.
How has early voting gone? Because there has been, I understand, pretty high turnout. Do you know if the early voting turnout has been higher than the voting turnout even for the presidential race?
It's on track currently to end up a little higher than it was. Votes are still coming in, obviously. We won't know how it shakes out. But yeah, there's a lot of energy around early voting again this time as there was on election day as well. But again, that strength is mostly among Democrats versus Republicans who still plan to show up more on election day than Democrats. But even that, you know, as a given, as a repeat pattern from election day to this Tuesday, Republicans are lacking in their early vote at this point. So a good sign for Democrats, but not something that should make everyone feel very peaceful and safe right now.
Right, because in several states in the November 3rd race, we saw that Republicans simply made plans to show up on the day of the election to vote. Democrats wanted to take advantage of the early voting. And in some states, it paid off for one party. In other states, it paid off for another party. And so for the second party. So in this case of Georgia, though, what's quite different is that you have, I imagine, tremendous amount of election fatigue. Here you have a state where the results for the presidential race were itself drawn out, massive amounts of controversy, even though there shouldn't have been any as to who won the state, huge pressure from Republicans outside the state and even some inside the state. And these Senate runoff races all coming in the winter, over the holidays, during a worsening pandemic. And massive amounts of money pouring into the state. I am not at all envious of the average Georgia voter right now.
It's true. I mean, if they watch TV, you know, it's got to be wall-to-wall Senate advertising. And that, you know, that gets exhausting, I imagine.
What do you expect needs to happen for Democrats or has been happening? Do you feel that the Democratic machinery that helped turn out the vote, you know, the Stacey Abrams folks, those get out the vote organizations that really helped turn out Democratic votes, did they, from what you can tell, do what needed to be done for these Senate races? Did President-elect Joe Biden and his running mate Kamala Harris do enough considering what's at stake for the Democrats?
Again, we won't know until everything is all said and done and all the votes are counted. But yes, those groups that, you know, worked so hard to turn out that vote for November 3rd didn't take a breather. They knew they couldn't, and the stakes are too high. And Biden and Harris have been spending a lot of time in Georgia, along with other national progressive luminaries, and that's good. And it's showing up in the early vote results at this point. But we'll have to see how things shake out after Tuesday.
Do you think that there was some criticism around the sort of door to door getting out the vote attempts from Democrats from the Biden campaign? Again, it's so challenging during a pandemic to get out the vote in person. So did Georgia's did all of that play out in Georgia in a way that you think it was beneficial? It's tough because as a Democrat, most Democrats are also more likely to take the coronavirus seriously, whereas you see the Trump Republicans flouting the rules, not really worrying about precautions, which I imagine might benefit them if they took advantage of it.
It's true. There was a little bit of a hesitation to go as hard on the door-to-door campaigning pre-November 3rd because of the coronavirus on the part of Democrats. But I think that Democrats learned their lesson in some states the hard way and have been, and obviously doing it in a very careful, socially responsible way. In terms of going to people's doors and talking to them about voting. But yeah, those groups have not taken a break. I think they're hoping that they might have, if the ones who celebrate Christmas might take a little breather around Inauguration Day, perhaps. But everyone has been working very hard to get that vote out and to keep voters engaged even over the holidays. One good thing about Georgia, though, is it is in the South, so at least folks aren't battling bitterly cold temperatures as they would in other parts of the country.
Right, they're not on the East Coast or the Northeast, rather. What about Trump himself as a liability in Georgia for the Republican Party? I mentioned earlier the fine line that Perdue and Loeffler, the Senate GOP candidates, have had to walk. Is Trump, there was a time early in Trump's tenure when his backing all but guaranteed wins for, or at least gave an edge to the candidates that he backed, that seemed to have changed a little bit depending upon which state you're talking about in the November 3rd race. Is Trump a liability or an asset for Perdue and Loeffler in Georgia?
At this point, given the way that things are shaking out in Georgia with regard to the presidential election results that he's so unhappy about, I think he's a liability for Republicans in Georgia. I think they would be feeling a lot more secure about this runoff election if he weren't continuing to kick sand all over the sandbox and in people's faces.
And in considering that Republicans are more likely to wait to vote on Election Day, any news item that breaks right before Election Day, I imagine would have an outsized impact on Republican voters even than Democratic voters. And so this phone call between Trump and Raffensperger, depending upon what type of Republican you are, you might think that's Trump doing, being the strong man that you want him to be, or really breaking the rules that you view as important to upholding the Constitution, right?
It's true. It's true. And anything, and Trump can tweet anything at any time that will be instant news. And so anytime up until the polls close, things can still change for the Republicans because they have such a volatile leader of their party.
One of the issues that seemed to be a liability politically for Loeffler and Perdue was these accusations of potential insider trading from last year that both of them were seen to have invested based on information that they were privy to as senators when the pandemic was first being declared. Do you know if that's something that their opponents, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, have used enough as reasons to vote against these Republicans? Has that been hampering their ability, you think?
I think that both Democrats in this race have been using that issue effectively. But keep in mind, the runoff is about turnout as it is of your own base as it is anything else. And so that news isn't going to sway folks who have already like very much made up their mind to vote for the Republican or the Democrat in each of those races. And so that kind of news impacts people in the middle, and that is a very small sliver of the Georgia electorate at this point. And so I think the focus for the Democrats has just been to reach out to their voters and get them to the polls.
I understand that a big part of Loeffler and Perdue's campaign has centered around the favorite Trump line of Democrats are going to unleash socialism and authoritarianism on the United States through backing these, you know, supposedly dangerous policies of Medicare for All and a Green New Deal that they say will destroy the country. Is that having any traction? And do the Democratic candidates even support the things that Loeffler and Perdue accuse them of supporting?
Most accusations that are being thrown at them by Loeffler and Perdue are ridiculous and they're garbage. And again, this is about, on both sides, this is about motivating their bases. Democrats have had accusations of socialism hurled at them since time out of mind. These accusations are more to the benefit of Republicans than supposed to dissuade people from actually voting Democratic. This is just red meat politics, and these Republicans are just trying to use these accusations to fire up their own base, really. It's less of an actual campaign issue and more of a turnout mechanism.
How has accessibility to the voting booth been during early voting? We started our conversation talking about Raffensperger and how, although he seems to be a principled Republican in opposing Trump's demand to engineer a win for him, he is the sort of Brian Kemp style of Republican who has tried to engage in voter suppression. Has Raffensperger taken actions after the November 3rd race to make it harder, especially for people of color and potential Democrats, to vote in the Senate races?
Well, I mean, one of the sad benefits of there having already been a large election on November 3rd is that Republicans in Georgia already kind of tried everything they were going to try. They, you know, limited the number of polling places for in-person voting. They try to make it harder to submit your votes by mail or to solicit them as a voter. But by the time they got past that election, they were probably a little bit out of ideas. There was some talk of trying to take some legislative recourse, but changing the rules in election that was literally already underway. There was the general and the runoff as a part of that same election. Changing those rules was just, you know, not in the cards legally for Republicans. And so I think they're more focused on what they can do in the months to come in the state to make things easier for their own party in the next election.
So as long as Georgia Democrats can repeat what they did for the November 3rd races, they might be in luck, but it's all relative to what Republicans end up doing. We'll certainly see, and I imagine that even by Wednesday, results may not be known. Just as in the presidential race, this may be a sort of week-long exercise until we find out the real results of the Senate races.
That's true.
Well, Carolyn, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
My guest has been Carolyn Fidler. She's one of the nation's foremost experts on state politics, also communications director at Daily Kos. And her weekly newsletter is called This Week in State House Action. It provides updates on state politics to thousands of reporters, political operatives, and observers. And we've been discussing the Georgia Senate runoff races taking place Tuesday, as well as the now infamous phone call between Trump and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger in Georgia. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, online at risingupwithsonali.com. Where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.